Anything that I claim is not possible, I have not tried. Anything that I claim is not possible, I have not tried. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California. We have our thought for today. Anything I claim is impossible, I have not tried. We can take from this remark that everything is possible. We can take from this remark that no matter what we want to do, no matter what we want to accomplish, no matter what is important to us, we can do it. We've been teaching that we are God. That's, of course, a big laugh, isn't it? If we were God, we would demonstrate every single thing that we wanted to demonstrate. If we were divine, we would be living in a very beautiful, magnificent life. Instead, we're living in garbage and irritation and unhappiness with each other. We're living in a world where there are wars and there are unhappinesses. There is disease and illness all about us. And if we were indeed God, we would not have to experience these negative things. But we are experiencing them, and we do want to experience them, and they are quite important to us for some reason or other. Now, why are they important to us? That is an answer that we will not come up with in our lifetime. It's a game that we're playing, and it's a game we say we don't want to play, but we are playing it very much just the same. We are losing our values, we are losing our reality, and it doesn't really matter. Now think about it. What if you were born with many problems, and you were not able to operate like other people? Other people being people who don't have what you have. And you would get used to that, and you'd get accustomed to it, and you'd say, that is my lot in life. That is what I'm doing here. And then, because you take this attitude, it will continue all of your life. Now, there are some people who are terribly irritated. They are greatly injured in an accident or incident, and they will not take it lying down. They will not accept the diagnosis of the medical profession based upon others who have had similar experiences, that they will not be returned to normal. And the will, the drive, the belief in the person is so great that he is going to prove this incorrect. Now, if he would take that same will and put it to his mind and make his mind aware that all he has to do is think the thought and he is whole again, then he would be whole again. But no, he wants to use his mind, his brain, he wants to use his willpower to make himself get well, to make himself do exercises, to make himself go through therapy, to make himself do all the experiences that are necessary to bring about right action again in his body. Like the young fellow who was jumping out of an airplane with a parachute in the service, and the parachute didn't open. And he just went, boom, splat, on the ground. And they picked him up and shoveled him together in a stretcher and took him to the hospital. And the doctors decided, well, this is a major experience for us. This is a crossword puzzle that we're going to put together. And so they put him together as best they could. But they told him that he would never walk and he would never do many other things. Well, in his hospital bed, he just got more and more irritated at the thought that somebody was telling him that he can't do something. He was like a little boy, you know, you can't tell me I'm not going to do it. I'm going to go do it, you know. Well, they told him he couldn't do it, and he just decided to go do it. So at night, when no one was around, he pulled himself, sort of dragging along the ground, from his hospital bed to the building across the way, which was the gymnasium. And in the gymnasium, he worked out every night. He didn't tell anybody what he was doing because he didn't want to be discouraged. He didn't want them to say, "It don't work. There's no sense in trying it. You don't need to bother." And the discouragement of him pulling himself over there was enough. He didn't need their verbal description of the impossibility of it. And after weeks of doing this, he built back his strength. He built back his ability to have his nerves and muscles and everything else back in shape again. Probably if they were to take x-rays while this was all happening, they'd say, "A miracle, a miracle." And truly, it would be a miracle. But the thing is, he had the will to make it happen. He claimed it was possible rather than claiming it was impossible. He didn't care whether anyone else had tried it or not and failed. He knew he was going to try it, and he didn't care to read about anybody else's experiences. He knew that he was working on a lone project, a project that took his desire to accomplish it, to bring it about. Anything I claim is impossible, I have not yet tried to do. I have been speaking to people about, coming to the campus here and saying the campus is a place of healing, the campus is a place of wholeness, the campus is a place where we have people who are in absolute perfection, where people here love one another so greatly, so much, that they overlook all the other little nonsenses that go on in the outer world, that people here on campus are constantly working on their spiritual goal, their spiritual life. And sometimes they are, and sometimes they're not. I see them always working on it. They don't see themselves doing that sometimes, and that's unfortunate, but that's their gift. Now, we've had many people come here to campus who have had beautiful healings for themselves, and they have not told you about them, and they never will. I know about them, but they have not told any of us about them. But they've come here and they've gone away, and then as they continued living their life, they got better and better and better, and they just thought that was just a natural activity of their body falling into place with right action. And this is great. What was it that they learned when they came here to campus? They learned that thoughts are things. They learned that there is nothing impossible. They learned that when they put a cause in motion, beautiful things happened. I do not like to demonstrate these things in front of people because the tendency is to say, it can't work, it's impossible. Whether you say it out loud or whether you say it in your heart. Now, I know that Ingeborg has said a number of things are impossible. And so for Ingeborg, they're going to be impossible. Sylvia has said a number of things are impossible. And so for Sylvia, they're going to be impossible. Ellen said a number of things were impossible. And then we changed her mind about that. And she began looking at her family not as the impossible condition, but as the possible condition. And because she changed her mind, her family changed their whole awareness in her consciousness. And they came to her saying, "Mama, wonderful, Mama, wonderful, wonderful," right? Now that could not have happened if you kept the attitude that you had in the beginning, the attitude of, oh dear, you know. Sylvia has the attitude of, oh dear, and Ingeborg has the attitude of, oh dear, and you love it, and you hang on to it, and it's going to be yours forevermore. You're going to live in this garbage forevermore. It's your choice, and I hope you really have a good time, and I use the word hope there wisely. Everyone who comes to campus here is going to get a big swift kick in the rear end from me. Because I see them as they truly are, and I say, you're whole and perfect. Now you believe you're whole and perfect. You put that cause in motion. You illustrate that in your life by all of your activities and all your thoughts and all your ways of doing things. And just watch the miracles happen in your life. At the table today, this morning, I began to tell the group at the table about what I'd like to see for them here on campus, what I'd like to see for them experiencing here on campus. And I no sooner got the words out of my mouth than the group at the table created Brian driving up and created Brian drawing their attention outside, creating Little Love going out the door, because I said, don't worry about him. And of course, they were worried about Little Love going out the door and that Little Love wouldn't come back in the door because they have not done their job with Little Love. They have not sat down with Little Love for 10 or 15 minutes every day and said, sit, come, go, sit, to teach him to behave, to teach him manners, to teach him to obey. But of course, that's not worthwhile, and the same with Button. It's not worthwhile to do that. It's not worthwhile to have them obey and say, sit, instead of running out the door and going off on their own, and then being afraid of being around a car or being somewhere else. You see, you haven't taken charge of the most simple things in life, your dogs, your cats, your pets. The simple thing in life, and it's just a couple of minutes of training every day, and it'll make them into the most desirable pets you could ever want. You wouldn't have to worry about them barking. The minute they bark, you go to them and say, no. But no, you let them run out the door barking, you let them run here, hither and yon, and then you say, why do they bark like that, and why do they do this? And yet when they're with Brian, for instance, they're just as gentle and loving as can be. But when they're not with him, they bark their heads off. Now, why is this? This is attitude. This is attitude. And they need to have their attitude adjusted. You understand that? They need their attitude adjusted. And when their attitude is adjusted, their life is a lot simpler, a lot more less restrictive of having to go out and tell the rest of the world, hey, I'm the boss here now, you just mind. That's not their job. Their job is to be here to do one thing. You may not know this, but their job to be here is to be a lover. Their only job is to be a lover. The only job Button and Love and the cats have for being our pets are to be lovers. Pets are to be lovers. We do not train them to be pit bulls. We do not train them to be vicious and to protect the property. Our consciousness protects the property, if you will, protect it. Our consciousness brings only good to the property. It has nothing to do with the divisiveness of a dog or a cat. Now, I started to tell you something very important. And you created Brian coming up. Now, that was a creation. That wasn't just accident. Nothing happens by accident. You know that. And then you created him coming up. And then you created a whole focus of redirection of your thoughts. And so with that whole focus of redirection of your thoughts, everyone's attention was drawn to a new attitude, a new direction. And I was talking to the walls. I was talking to the stones. So there's no purpose to talk. Herb, why didn't you finish doing what you do? Well, why didn't you pay attention when I was doing it? Why didn't you pay attention when I was doing it? Swami Rama told the story in Living with the Himalayan Masters. And when he's a young Swami, and he was walking around the countryside, and he came upon a young man who was separating ants and then putting them back together again as a magical thing to show to his people and to get them to believe in him instead of the philosophy But to get to believe in his magic and his ability to do miracles, I mean, it's a wrong reason. It's a totally wrong reason. And Swami said, hey, where'd you learn to do that? That's pretty cool. And the young man said, from your master. My master? Yes, from your master. And so he dashed back to his master and he said, teacher, you didn't teach me how to cut apart ants and put them back together again? And his teacher said, you weren't in class that day. You weren't in class that day. You were out running around playing with your bear friends. You had a couple of little cubs that you were making friends with. And I told you not to make friends with those cubs, because if you make friends with those cubs, you're going to have a very sad heart, because they're going to want to go and get married and want to have little cubs, and they're going to want to leave you. And you're going to have developed a friendship between them that somebody's heart's going to have to break. It's yours or theirs, and it's not going to be theirs because instinct carries them on. But you see, even this great man, when he was a young student, didn't always pay attention. And you are mature students, and you're not paying attention. And that's okay. Anything I claim is impossible, I have not tried. And you tell me lots of things are impossible. Don't do that anymore. Don't ever argue with me, because you won't win. Because I already know. I already know the outcome. If I ask you anything, don't tell me, well, blah, blah, blah. Just say, yes, sir. Yes, sir. When you're in the service and an officer tells you to do something, you say, yes, sir. How high should I jump? You know, yes, sir. Your command is my direction. And yet here in this school, I get back talk. And the back talk does not do you any good. It does not do you any good. What you should always do whenever I ask you to do something, say, oh, yes. And if you don't like me saying it, don't create me saying it. But you create me as your teacher here, as your share, your mentor, whatever you want to call me. And so when I give you these little examples of you standing up for principle, you immediately say, right. You see, sometimes your anger or your irritation or your self-righteousness or the other things get in the way and you forget where you are. But how do you think it would look if you went to the Queen of England at her inaugural ball or something like that, and then you ran up to the Queen and said, hey, Queen, you know, this isn't going right in my world, and this isn't going right in my world, and this isn't going right in my world. The Queen would say, sweetheart, go talk to one of my people. I'm rather attentive right now on what I'm doing. Go talk to one of my people. She wouldn't say, get lost, you stupid person. She'd just say, go talk to one of my people. I'm rather busy right now. Not that your interest and your needs are not important to her, but she has quality. She has dignity. She knows when to search and when not to search, when to be. You see, this is something that we all might learn. In the past 6 months now, Ellen has learned a great deal about herself, her world, her word. She's perhaps demonstrated more miracles in this past 6 months than she has in her entire life. Now, what have the rest of you been doing? Have you been sleeping? Have you demonstrated miracles too? I doubt it. If you demonstrated miracles, you'd be writing them in your blessing book. And I know that you're not writing in your blessing book. You tell me that you are, but I know you aren't. And the only reason I'm saying this is, when you write in your blessing book, then you look and you recognize that things are happening to you. Miracles are taking place in your life. Wonderful things are happening, but you don't write them down, so they just become part of the common everyday activities. which is a lovely way to have it too. But the thing is, when they're just the common everyday activities, you don't give yourself credit for what you have done. And you want to give yourself credit. You don't want anybody else to give you credit. But you want to realize that you've been doing the impossible. You've been doing the impossible things every moment of the day. Now do more. Do more. Isn't it interesting about the various diets that come to our attention now? What is the prevalent phrase that in, I should say pregnant phrase, that's in every one of the diets? The pregnant phrase that's in every one of the diets is, you can eat all you want. Isn't that interesting? You can eat all you want. There's a few things that they say are no-nos, but basically they say you can eat all you want. Now, that should tell us something very seriously, that it's not what goes on in the outer. It goes on in our inner self. True perfect weight, true dieting, true perfect health, true miracles take place within us. Now, put that in your blessing book and enjoy it. Because that's an awareness. If you can come to that awareness, I'm not saying you don't need diets or you don't need this and you don't need that. Do anything you want. It makes no difference. You're going to do it and you're going to do it again. And then, you see, why is it the diets work for some people? Because they have come to that place in their life where they don't give a damn. They'll just try it and say, so if it works, it works. And then it works. It works not because the diet works, but because they have stopped protesting that they needed the diet. They just took it. Some people was quite serious, but for them too, they just took it. They just did it. The diet is not going to make us fat or thin, but it's going to be an indication of our discipline. I know this does not fall true on all of your ears, but if you will just listen to yourself, in the past 2-3 years or more, we have had more diets come through our doors, more diets that were absolutely, categorically fantastic and would work without the slightest chance of not working. They will work! And you have even done them, and they didn't work. But they didn't work not because the diets didn't work, but because you expected them to work. And you see, what happens on every diet with every person is you cheat. What happens on every statement where I'm saying I'm whole and perfect, you will cheat and say, I don't feel so good. On every statement you say, I'm whole and perfect, you will say, oh, I hurt. On every statement you say, I'm whole and perfect, you will do its contrary. And then you wonder why it doesn't work. Well, this morning what I had planned on showing you, which I may do someday, it was how you could sit or stand or walk or do whatever you want, but I don't like that. I don't like that. Where you could sit and be quiet and turn your attention to the silence within you and say, I am whole and perfect. I am whole and perfect. I like me. I like me. I like me. I'm whole and perfect. And say it for one full day for 8 hours, just 8 hours. And you watch what happens to you. Now, mentally, I was a little unhappy with the thought just now of my saying, and you sit. Because some of you are going to say, well, I want to get up and walk around. I want to go and do this. I want to go and walk around the path. I want to lay down. I want to stand up. I want to sit. I want to listen to music. It doesn't make any difference what you do. if you are antagonistic to the program, whatever you do doesn't make any difference because the program isn't going to work for you. If you will just do as I ask you to do, not because it makes sense, not because it's intelligence, not because it is the only way to go, but because you're not objecting. You're just flowing with what I ask you to do. And in flowing with it, you get the miracle in your life. By flowing with it, you get the... You know, all of you have a tendency to be like little Love here. He comes to you and, "I'm hungry, I'm hungry, I'm hungry." And he stands there while you're eating, begging and begging and begging because he hasn't been taught not to do that. And so then you reach down to pet the little character and he backs away. And that's exactly how you are. You beg and beg and beg for healing, beg for this and beg for that. And the moment the gift is being bestowed on you, you back away. And what a silly thing to do. And I'm talking here on the internet too. But what a silly thing to do. What a silly thing to ignore the very thing that is going to bring you a joy and peace in your heart. I was going to say salvation. And it is salvation of a kind. But to bring you joy and peace in your heart. The very thing. And you back away from it. Because you know you've been doing some bad things. You know you've been doing some wrong things, like little Love. Little Love knows he shouldn't be begging. But his mother doesn't mind. His mother doesn't take him and say, "Sit in the corner here now, and you stay here on your pad. When we're done eating, then you come and play with us again." You know, a pet is in our world for our enjoyment. A pet is in our world for our enjoyment. We must, as the pet's parent, if you will, we must, as the pet's master, make sure that the pet is well-trained. Make sure that it has good manners. Make sure that it does not beg at the table. Make sure that it does not bark. It does not, it can go romping outside and barking because of joy and happiness, but as far as protection and awareness, it doesn't have to do that. We are the master of our pet. That's a joke. We should be the master of our pet. We should be the master of our pet. It's very simple. You all know that there's pet schools, there is pet training programs, there are pet techniques. We should be the master of our pet, okay? Now, if this simple creature that we are the master of has bamboozled us and fooled us and made us look like a stupid jerk because we have not mastered them, and then they waggle their tail and we forget all about it, you know. Think of where you stand on your spiritual path. How the diversions of your spiritual path have taken away your mastery of yourself and have taken you away from standing firm for who you are under all circumstances. Are you the master? Are you the master of your life? Are you putting causes in motion that are causes of joy or causes of sorrow? Are you putting causes in motion that are bringing great happiness into your life or that are limiting you? No. Every time you say, "I can't do it," you're limiting yourself. Every time you say, in your heart, if not out loud, "You bother me, go away, go away." You know, you created that circumstance coming into your life. So take responsibility for it. If you don't want to create that coming into your life, just say, "I am surrounded by people who are happy and harmonious with my ideals and my dreams." And then you won't create people coming into your life who want to have you help them find their pathway. Now think on these things and think very seriously, because this is what it's all about. Anything I claim is impossible. I have not tried it. Let's start training ourselves with our pets first. How well-mannered a pet you have shows how well-mannered a consciousness you have in walking your spiritual path. If your pet is disrespectful of you and does not sit when you tell him to sit and come when you tell him to come and stop when you tell him to stop or whatever, simple little commands, 5 or 10 of them at the most, and you haven't taken the time to teach them to your pet, how much time have you not taken to teach yourself, I'm whole and perfect, I am spiritually illumined, I am God, I am the allness, I am that I am. A simple little statements. And you don't need to understand them. In fact, it's best if you don't understand them. They're good, but put them in motion, and rather than argue with them and try to understand them, just let them sink into your consciousness as a blessing and a gift that is very precious for you. We certainly had a good talk this morning, so practice it and know that I love you, I love you, I love you.